Welcome to another episode of Emoji Chat. Today, again, I'm with my wonderful wife, Sandra, on my side. And we're going to talk today about a topic that we think is very interesting. It is the concept of emotional communication. But before we start deep diving into the topic, I would like to share, as always, the quote of the day. The quote this time comes from Stephen Covey, who is the author of 7 Habits for Highly Successful People. And it says the following. It says, seek first to understand, then to be understood. Which I think is quite substantial in itself. But what do you think that will mean for emotional communication?
Well, what I thought when I first read it was maybe the first thing we can think about when we read it is maybe we need to train ourselves to understand other people in that way they can understand us better. But I was thinking about maybe we have to train ourselves to understand ourselves better because sometimes that's what it can make it harder for us to express ourselves is that we don't even know what is going on inside our minds, or we don't know how to express ourselves, or we don't even know how we're feeling. So maybe something we can think about, talking about emotional communication, is that first we need to understand ourselves and then we can communicate better.
That's a very interesting point, because I think normally when we think of communication, we think of a message that either comes from outside or that we're sending from inside to the outside. But we have to be mindful that emotional communication is also that internal dialogue. It affects, or this concept of emotional communication affects our internal dialogue. At the end of the day, I think one of the wonderful things that I like about the book of Course in Miracles, from Helen Schuckman, is that she says that everything that we are, we project onto the environment, right? So I love that you pointed that it's not just about understanding other people, but you have to actually understand yourself, and then you're able to project that onto the environment.
Because we need to be connected to ourselves, and we are going to talk about this later on when we talk about the different types of communication. But I think that's one of the problems when we don't connect with ourselves, we don't know what is going on inside our minds, is that even when we are trying to communicate something, maybe verbally we can communicate something, but the rest of the communication that is going on, it doesn't follow what we're saying. So that's why I think it's important to get to know ourselves so we can be in the same line of communication, no?
On the same page, everybody's on the same page.
Exactly.
Yeah. But I would like to share on the definition of the word and the concept. I wanna share how the concept of emotional communication was born. And I shared this in my book, The Neutral Leader. But and maybe some other author of emotional intelligence or psychology has already used the expression emotional communication in the sense that I'm gonna share it. But for me, it was born in a very particular circumstance. So for those who don't know us, we are parent to two wonderful teenage children. I know wonderful and teenage might not always go together in the same sentence, but sometimes it can go together. But our firstborn, Eric, he is 15 years old. But he's a freaking big kid. He's really big and strong. So he's like 6'3". And 193 centimeters for the non-imperial people, and he weighs nearly 100 kilos, so he's a big boy. But Eric is severely deaf in both ears, and he's also been diagnosed with severe autism. So Eric does not communicate in many ways. Basically, doesn't communicate.
Now he's communicating a little bit more, but he doesn't communicate verbally.
Correct. And back in the day when he was 4 or 5, 6 years old, max, 4 or 5, he was going through a tough childhood times, I guess. And it was, I remember that in this particular time, I had the afternoon or evening shift in my work, and sometimes I would come home at 12:30, 1:30, 2:30, like 3 o'clock in the morning. And I will find you pulling your hair and crying your heart out on the couch because it, you know, the kid, you know, Eric was still jumping around and making noise, and he wouldn't go to sleep. You know, he had severe sleeping disorder at that time, you know, when he was in the early stages of autism. But so I would come home like I would do every other day, you know, most of the other nights, and I will, you know, just relieve you from the duty of watching Eric, and then you will go to sleep, and I will stay there for the rest of the morning until he will fall asleep, whatever that time was, like 3, 4, 5 in the morning, whatever. And you know, this particular night where you know, I was just tired. I was just like, it was one of those nights when you just want to quit, like, I can't do this no more, man. Like, come on, Eric, please just go to sleep. And I was just whining and complaining and just, you know, throwing devils at him, like, you know, wishing that, you know, he wasn't there, that he didn't have autism, and, you know, what the heck, you know, what we're going through this. And it was just this constant whining, and Eric just kept on jumping around, and I was just self-absorbed in my thought of how miserable my life was and all that. And then I remember that in a particular moment, Eric just came and stopped in front of me. And there was this moment where, I mean, obviously he's not verbal, so no communication was made verbally. But then he, you know, he looked me in the eye. We connected eye to eye. And then without saying anything, he told me, "Daddy, I need help. I can't stop myself." And for me, that moment, I picked him up, put him on my lap, and then 30 seconds he fell asleep. And then I just started crying because I, at the end, I was just, you know, complaining and whining and all this crap that I was going, you know, and all of a sudden my boy was asleep, and, you know, I felt guilty about that. And then that, I think that's the moment that, even though I didn't realize it back then, that's the moment where the concept in my head, in my paradigm, the concept of emotional communication was born. On that ability of being able to connect with somebody, communicate something at a connection level that does not require anything other than that connection itself.
Mm-hmm. And I think maybe that was the point that you started realizing about that, and maybe not connecting the dots, because we were going through a really tough time and we were trying to get better emotionally and things like that. But then with time, as you say, you connected those dots and you started realizing the things that you learned. And it's something we have been specializing.
You can say that.
Exactly.
You can say that.
And it's one of the things that I like. Some people say, and even ask at first when they ask you, "Oh, does he communicate?" And maybe people will say no, because he doesn't communicate verbally, but he does communicate.
Indeed.
Because there is no way somebody cannot communicate. There is always something that tells you about that, about how they're feeling or what they want or something like that. And Eric, because he doesn't communicate verbally, we have been learning to read those signs that tell us what he needs,
how he's feeling. It's part of that connection that we've developed.
Exactly. But for us, it is the only way. All the parents can do that with their children. Even when they tell you something, you can feel maybe something is going on, and they try to say, "Oh, I'm fine, don't worry." So you can get to know that not everything is the way they communicate verbally, but for us, it's the only way we can communicate with Eric. So we have
been forcefully focusing
a lot on that. And now he's communicating through pictures or maybe some sign language, just a little bit. But we have been specializing on paying attention to his mood, to the faces he makes, or just the way he moves, or or goes around or facial expressions, things like that.
Yeah.
And because of that, I think now we pay more attention to those around us and how they're communicating that way.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. And I think Miraban's model of communication talks about this. It says that statistically, verbally, we only communicate about 7% of the message. You know, the rest, I think 35 or 37% is actually the nonverbal communication. And everything else, which means is everything that we don't say that we do, and then everything else is the environment. So that model says that normally, which when we talk about communication language, we think of, I'm gonna put, you know, 100% of my attention and focus to what is being said. But that is only 7% of the message. Everything else happens around it. And I think that's in line with organizational psychology, the way that they that they set up communication, right, or the stages or levels of communication. So they express these in three kind of levels. They call these primary, secondary, and tertiary communication. And primary communication is what we say, right? You know, what we express verbally, yes, no, whatever, right? So we're saying something as the primary communication. We all understand that part. Secondary communication is the nonverbal communication, our gestures, our expressions, the way that we move, our tone, our pitch, everything around it that is not nonverbal, right? But tertiary communication is what is ongoing in the environment, whatever that environment is. Whether it's the actual mood that you have or how you set up the environment. Like, for example, we're trying to be kind of receptive in the emoji chat podcast. You know, the environment, we set it up kind of cozy and nice and familiar. For example, a lot of people don't understand that if I'm your manager and you come to my office and you're knocking and you're asking for help, whatever that help is. You know, you have an argument with a colleague and you're demanding my attention, and I say yes, so my primary message, my primary communication is yes, I'm listening to you, but imagine that while I'm saying yes to you, I'm typing on my computer or something, then obviously my 100% of attention cannot be with you because I'm doing something else at the same time. So I'm saying yes on one level in the primary communication, but secondary communication is telling you no. But then even if I were just to pay attention, but everything in my environment will tell you, don't come to my office. Like, you know, it's a cold office, it's not receptive, I'm gonna keep you standing instead of giving you a chair, or all the other things in the environment will still give you a big chunk of the message that you're getting, even though if I'm saying yes, and I seem to be paying attention. So, in a sense, this is applicable to life, or at least what do you think? Do you think, because in the work environment it's a lot easier to kind of match up these concepts, but do you think that these will apply to life itself, like daily life?
Of course, and with the family setup, right? With your partner or your children or in your house, what can happen is that because you feel you have more trust with those people, because sometimes when you do that and you go to a job interview or you are with in your job and you try not to behave in certain ways just to look like you are doing something better or try to make your presence look in another way. But when you're at home with the people you know and trust, it's like, whatever.
You don't even need to say anything, because it's like, you know me so well, like after 20 years of knowing, you know, being together, there's not much I need to say.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like an open book for you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, straight away you know whether it's a good day, a bad day, or mm-hmm. whatever is going on. Right?
It gets to a point, for that you have to connect with people, and it gets to a point with your husband or your parents or your wife, it gets to a point where you don't know much verbal communication to get to know those things, because you have connected before, so now you can realize that. But what happens in the home setup is that sometimes we don't pay attention to those things, and maybe we are communicating one thing verbally but our presence, our mood, or the way we are doing things doesn't communicate the same. And I think it affects the most when parents and children are communicating, when we are trying to teach them something or to let them know something, and it doesn't get out the way. Like, maybe we are stressed out because of another situation, but you keep that mood, and then you talk to your children about something, and the message they receive can be a little bit confused for them. It can be a little bit, yeah.
I love that, because you touch on two very interesting particular points. One of them is honesty. You have to be honest with yourself. And for that, you have to know yourself, like you were mentioning before. But in the work environment, we're kind of trained to create this persona of us just to, for the, you know, best first impressions. But at the end of the day, you are who you are. You know, you have to, and both the organization and the individual, the employee, needs to connect at the level of identity. I love this because Bates and Dills, who are known to be the parents of neurolinguistic programming, they say that, you know, they call this the inverted neurological levels, the pyramid, right? And at the bottom of that inverted pyramid, which is the most important, is identity. But they say that at the top of that pyramid, which is inverted, it's the results, the environment, kind of the superficial part of the you know, of our persona, our identity, right? And then right underneath is behaviors. So behaviors cause the results. And then skills and abilities come under, and then beliefs and values were kind of the guiding principles to take us into our abilities. But at the level of connectedness and connectivity, where you can connect with people, is at the identity level, which is at the bottom of that inverted pyramid. And I love that because organizations need to understand, and relationships as well, not just people in organizations and leaders, but that if you want to engage somebody, you have to connect with them at that level of identity without filters or persona or so, bringing honesty in that individual up. And it's a lot easier for us to create personas. We feel much more comfortable at home, so we don't have to fake it out. We don't have to act out in the work environment. We tend to do it because, you know, we want to cause a good impression, maybe a promotion, more money, a better job, whatever. Or just simply just to get away from, you know, whatever, right? To get away from yourself if you don't accept yourself. But one of the points you touch, I think, is fantastic, is honesty. But the second, I think, is even more important, which is the concept that I call emotional dissonance. And what emotional dissonance is exactly what you were relating before. And I've talked to parents about this in workshops. It's like when, you know, if I ask you as a mother, as a parent, you know, what would you give for your children? What would you be? What would you give for your children?
Anything
and everything.
And everything.
Your life, if necessary, right? And straight away, we go to that extreme of, you know, for my kids, I will do anything, right? Everything. But if that kid is playing with a little bouncy ball in the living room, and is about to hit that bouncy ball in the new TV, flat TV, 4K, you know, 1500 euros TV, and it's about to crash it, it's like, freaking, I'm gonna kill that kid. Like, you go to the other extreme. You went from going, you know, giving your life for it to just want to strangle that kid because it's gonna break the TV. So that is the concept of emotional dissonance. You're sending opposed messages, right? And that seems a bit extreme to understand the concept, but it happens very subtly in many levels,
mm-hmm.
in our relationships especially, right? Like when you're trying to say, don't get angry with your brother when you're actually screaming at your daughter saying, don't get angry with your brother, and you're being angry at her. So you say the message, you know, you're telling something, but then you're not applying it yourself. So that message can never go through entirely,
mm-hmm.
right? It's difficult to connect. And I think organizations kind of err in that manner, that when they're trying to engage employees, when they're trying to engage the organization into a strategic approach, they go into a conference and then they say the message, our culture is that everybody works as one, but then maybe the systems and the processes and the actual relationship with the leaders are not Exactly that. And then doesn't matter how many times you repeat it in a conference with a work
mm-hmm.
environment.
Mm-hmm.
Where if your door is not open when they go to your office, then how can you tell them that you're open for them, right? And that's the idea of emotional distance. So I think we could wrap up, you know, those as a summary, those three concepts for today's episode, because we intend to talk about this in the next two episodes as well, about emotional communication, for example. Next episode, I think we can treat the concept of how emotional communication works in the internal dialogue and what are the effects of that internal dialogue in the projection that we create of ourselves. So we touched briefly on, based on my experience with Eric, how it was born, is that emotional communication is about the connection, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it only happens when you're truly connected. The second is what you said about honesty, that emotional communication is about presenting yourself for what and who you are. You don't have to fake it out, you don't have to create a persona. And then the third concept is about emotional dissonance, avoiding, you know, breaking the connection through emotional dissonance will definitely break the connection. So you have to always be consistent with the message, whether it's verbal, whether it's in the systems, whether it's in the interactions, etc., etc. So I think it's a good beginning to the topic.
Yeah.
So thank you for staying with us, and we'll see you on the next one.
Bye.